Blog Talk Radio.
Music can only mean one thing. Those of us at Black Shoe Diaries are coming together to put out a new podcast for you guys. Welcome, everyone, to the seventh episode of the BSD Basket Pro Show. As usual, I am your host, Bill DeFilippo, here to talk about what has been really the first bad week that Penn State has had this season. And fortunately, I don't have to talk about it by myself because I am joined by our basketball editor, Chad Markulich. Chad, how you doing, my man?
I've been better, you know.
Yeah, haven't we all? Haven't we all? How many beers have you consumed between the start of last night's game and 3 seconds ago?
Not 69, so it might as well be none.
Amen. And we have a special guest this week. Eric drove off a bridge, so he can't be with us. We are joined by, from Penn Live, a good friend of the site, a good friend of mine, somebody walked with me at graduation, writes about Penn State basketball for them, one of the nicest guys on the planet, someone you should all be following on Twitter immediately if you're not. I'm going to stop saying nice things about him because it's going to get kind of creepy if I keep going. Ladies and gentlemen, Stephen Pianovich. Piano, how you doing, man?
Oh, man, I'm great after that introduction. It's probably the best intro I've ever had, ever. So, that cheered me up a little bit. Thank you. And, thanks for having me. I'm glad I could join you guys.
Yeah, we're glad you could be on. And if you ever need a hype man, let me know, and I'll happily do that for you. So we were going to do one of these last week at the end of the non-conference slate when Penn State was 12-1 after it had strenuous game when it took down Drexel. And then ended up walking over Dartmouth. Some things got in the way. There was a bowl game in New York, and we had to reschedule a bit. So we decided we were going to come on after the start of the conference slate. My apologies. And we are never taking another week off from this podcast again because only bad things happen. For those of you that aren't aware, Penn State played 2 games this week. One was against Wisconsin, when the Nittany Lions, they played about as well as they could, but unfortunately so did Wisconsin. The Badgers took down the Nittany Lions on New Year's Eve during the Big Ten opener for both schools, 89-72. And then Penn State came back and lost just a brutal game against Rutgers, 50-46. But before we jump into that, the reason that we kind of wanted to have Steven on is because Chad and I don't get to cover the team as close on a day-to-day basis as basically anyone else on the beat. So we have Pianovich here, who has a bit of a different insight from the rest of us. So, Steven, what is the general vibe that you've gotten around this team so far before, the conference late started?
Yeah, right. Full disclosure, I haven't been at either of the last 2 games, and I'm sure the demeanor's not quite where it was last time I saw these guys, which was late December. If you look at non-con and talking back to, 2 weeks ago when everything was going well for this team, this is a very tight group. And I think Chambers has said that a few times in his non-conference or during the non-conference plays, how he has a good locker room. And you can sense that. And you can kind of see it on the court. The guys really get along well. You can tell that they know that DJ is the guy. And DJ knows he's the guy, but he does a good job of, knowing when to get his. And going when to distribute the ball and letting other guys get theirs. And they have a pretty good chemistry going on, I think, on both ends of the court, off the court, too. You got guys that are fitting in well. Gino's fitting into a new role really well. Shep Garner doesn't play like an 18-year-old by any stretch of the imagination. This team definitely gets along very well. Of course, they got along very well when they were winning 10 games in a row. So it's going to be tested here, especially after a very bad loss last night. But, this team, you can definitely sense they have good chemistry.
All right, that's a positive. So basically your general sense is that, like, the team handled the early success pretty well. Is that a safe assumption to make?
Yeah, they did. I mean, and they were tested. I mean, they didn't need to be as much as they were in that non-conference where they had a lot of close games that came down to the wire, games that they probably could have put away. I think it did help them a little bit, and it helped them in some late-game situations. And when you're winning, it's easy to come together well, but this team needed that, I think, especially after the way kind of last year went when, you know, you lose six brutal games in a row, sorry, Big Ten schedule. You've just a lot of really tough losses. To get a couple good wins under the belt, maybe not good in the sense of RPI wins or, you know, teams' opponents, but good in the sense that you're winning games late and figuring out how to put some teams away, even though it might be lesser competition, I think that can really help a locker room and can be important early in the year. And I think, you know, Chambers kind of senses that too. Again, it's going to be tested here, especially if this thing keeps going downhill the way it has been the last week. But it's definitely the best vibe I've sensed from Penn State team in a while.
Right, very good. And has there been really anything notable that anybody has kind of said or kind of done that you've seen that has kind of set the course for how the season has gone so far? Like, how is this team responding to, or how had it prior to this little stretcher here, how had it responded to some of the kind of, I don't want to say unnecessary adversity that it's faced throughout the course of the season, but the unexpected adversity that we saw when it's winning by 3-4 points against teams that it should be blowing out, theoretically speaking.
Yeah, right. I think the one thing I really noticed in November and December was just how much of a leader DJ Newbill is and how comfortable he is without Tim Frazier. I mean, if you looked last year, he was always, you know, you could always talk about, oh, it's Penn State's backcourt, they have those two guys, and that's what everyone talked about, was Frazier and Newbill, Newbill and Frazier, however you want to put it. But now it's just on him. And, I mean, he has other seniors around, like Ross, and he has upperclassmen, Brandon Taylor, Diamond Jack. But he's, you know, he's definitely the guy on the court, off the court, wherever they are. He's their leader in pretty much everything they do. And you get the sense that he just handled it really well. And he's handled it really well in talking about it. He's handled it really well playing with it. And so, I mean, that's one thing I took away from it. And also, I mentioned this earlier, some of the younger guys, because this is an upperclassman-laden team for the most part. But especially in the backcourt, guys who are taking on new roles, Gino, John Johnson, and Chef Gardner have all seemed comfortable in what they're doing this year, and their confidence levels are high, and they've talked like that, and they've shown it on the court.
Very, very good. So we'll kind of jump into a really brief, kind of use that stuff as kind of a really brief non-conference recap, if you will. Of course, the team went 12-1, only loss came to Charlotte in the Charleston Classic. I guess we'll kind of, We'll go back to Stephen, and something that Chambers said at the end of Penn State's game against Dartmouth in the press room after the game. That was the one game I got to go. He said that the non-conference schedule, which has gotten hammered by people, he said it wasn't as bad as people think because they played a bunch of teams that were so stylistically different, it would prepare the team for Big Ten play. I don't have the exact quote, but it was something along those lines.
Yeah, I remember what you said.
Yeah. So, okay, so I'm not just making things up again. Is that kind of – did you kind of get that vibe, or did you kind of expect coming into the conference play that this team hadn't really challenged itself as much as it probably should?
I think that, yeah, they probably could have tried to schedule another game or two, and I still think Penn State should be trying to schedule a couple, like a local Power 5 team, and it'd be like a West Virginia or Pitt or something like that in the non-con. I think that'd be very good, even if they lose that game. Every year, just get a good Power 5 team on the schedule. That's just my personal opinion. I think they probably expected to maybe win a game or two in Charlotte, too, which would have put them against some higher RPI teams and some better competition instead of playing Cornell and USC in those final two games, which wasn't helping the schedule at all. So I think they kind of expected, maybe not expected, but at least hoped to get one or two more tougher opponents, better matchups in those games. But, I mean, some of them were good, like G-Dub, Akron, even like Drexel. I know Drexel's having a down year, but that's a team that Pat likes having on the schedule because it's a, you know, it's a Philly team. He likes playing at least one of those every year, and to kind of get a team from the Big Five. You know, I guess Drexel's not a Big Five team, but a Philly team, a team of that caliber, on the schedule. He likes doing that. So I think, yeah, it's probably missing one or two, though, one or two big games. I think they can get that from a Power 5 team to schedule in the future. I know Pat has talked about scheduling West Virginia, and they played Pitt last year in the ACC Challenge. But their Big Ten ACC Challenge game wasn't very good this year. Virginia Tech having another down season. They're a very young team. So I think it can be better in the future, and I think they have to make it a little bit better in the future.
Yeah. Let's get Chad back in, because my guess is he's fallen asleep.
Chad, sorry. I don't know how many beers he had, but...
Chad, do you...
painting me as a raging alcoholic. I appreciate that, guys. Thank you.
Yeah, well, I mean, last year when we did the
BS
drink-off...
But
when we did the BS drink-off before the before the Michigan game last year, and I did my
right.
pre-drink-off power rankings, I put you at number one. So,
yeah, protect the title,
so,
Chad.
Yeah, yeah, got to wear that proudly, man. But yeah, well, I'll kind of ask you the same question. Chambers thought the team did a much better job than most people think scheduling out of conference. Do you agree with those sentiments, disagree with those sentiments? What are your basic thoughts on what he had to say there?
Like Steve said, you know, they could have played another power conference team or two. You know, you like to see them play tougher competition to get a better gauge of where they're at. I don't know. It's just because, you know, Eric had a piece on our site a couple days ago about how Chambers kind of gained the RPI in his favor a little bit this year, playing you know, a couple road games, like, you know, at Marshall, the neutral site games in Charleston, that kind of don't kill your RPI as much as they would, you know, just playing them at home. So, you know, there was a bit of a, you know, it was a little strategic, I think, the way you put it together. But at the same time, you know, it doesn't really give us a great, it didn't give us a great, you know, idea of where Penn State is as a team as opposed to what their record said. So,
yeah.
You know, it's, and you never know, like, who was available to schedule in the first place, you know, over last year.
Yeah.
Like, oh, I don't want to, you know, say, oh, we should have scheduled this team, we should have scheduled this team, when you really don't know the ins and outs of it. So, all in all, you know, it could have been better, but at the same time, it doesn't kill Penn State, you know. It wouldn't kill Penn State if they were in a position to make the big dance. But, you know, as we saw this past weekend, that's not really the case right now. So, that's how it goes.
Certainly.
Yeah.
Just public service announcement, if you haven't read Eric's fantastic RPI piece yet, set aside 6.5 hours. I'll post the link down below. You can read it there. It was very good. It's very long, but like everything Eric does, it's awesome. But yeah, you almost got the vibe that this team was kind of banking on beating Charlotte in the first round of the Charleston Classic, so then it could have played against some tougher competition. Unfortunately, it lost. It's just an absolutely crazy game against them. But we're going to forget the last two games ever happened just for a second. We'll jump into them in a minute. And, Chad, we'll start with you. Coming out of the non-conference, how much did you actually think we knew about this team? Whether it was identity, whether it was personnel, whether it was how good it actually was, anything like that?
It was still there's still a bit of a mystery going into the conference play. I think they still are, even if you do come out these last two games, because I don't think they're as bad as they played against Rutgers. I don't think they're as good as they played against, you know, the George Washingtons and some of the tougher teams on the schedule so far. But, yeah, I mean, you know, you have Shep Groner coming out of nowhere from the start of the season to, you know, be like the team's second option, really. So that was, you know, still a bit of a surprise and still up in the air as to what he can do in the Big Ten. Yeah, and some guys, you know, Brandon Taylor is always a bit of an enigma, the way he plays. It's just so hard to tell the team because you have Newbill, who's, a guaranteed almost 20-point scorer a night, and a hodgepodge of guys who can give you 15, 20 points a night, but it just never happens on a consistent basis. So, I don't know, it's just still really tough to tell what this team, what their ceiling is and what their floor is.
Yeah, in regards to the whole second score thing, it's almost like you put a list of four names, Brandon Taylor, Shep Groner, Geno Thorpe, and John Johnson on a roulette wheel. You spin it around, you throw a dart on it, and, like, that's your best way of figuring out which person is going to have the best offensive night. Yeah, I kind of want to ask you the same thing. Going into the conference play, what was your general sense of this team? Was this team, what was the 12-1 record a fluke? Was it, are they that good? If not, are they close to being that good? Just kind of some general
yeah.
senses you got from the first 13 games of the season.
Yeah, what I really took away from their non-con was that this Pezzi team was different than a lot of past Pezzi teams in two ways, that they were confident because they had 12 wins and they had a 10-game winning streak. And you could tell that, you could kind of get the sense that these guys were playing with confidence and they kind of believe that they can win. I think DJ said right after going into the Big Ten that he felt like they could play with anybody. And I genuinely think he believes that, still does, I assume. And the other thing I took away was that people, at least a couple more people, were caring about this team. The people were talking about, and you guys would see this too on online and wherever, that more people that don't usually care about Penn State basketball were at least paying some attention to Penn State basketball in mid to late December, which is a pretty rare occurrence. So they did those two things, and that's why I think the non-con, where I think it was a good thing for them to get 12 wins, no matter who they were against. Some teams better than others, some games better than others. To get 12 wins, to get to 12-1, to start getting a belief inside and outside the locker room, I think that was a very good thing. And I think if that was Pat's goal, he definitely accomplished it in the non-con. You know, again, those things can both falter. Belief inside and outside the locker room can falter if you start to lose some games. So we'll see how that goes as far as Big Ten play continues. Those are the main two things I took away from those first 2 months.
Very good. Piano, I'll go back to you, and this may be the last question before we jump into the unfortunate recaps. Outside of DJ, who would you say was the team's most important player for the first 13 games of the season?
I'm going to go with Geno Thorpe. It's kind of a little bit of a toss-up between Geno and Shep. I'll give it to Geno just because of what he could do as a guy that comes in off the bench, as a guy who can score now. Like, I did not expect Geno Thorpe to be putting up. I don't know how much he's averaging right now. It's probably somewhere about 8, 9, 10 a game. And the way he's getting to the basket this year, he's shooting it. He's shooting a lot more than he is last year. Because last year he'd come in and just kind of be this guy who'd come in when they need to press. It was just kind of lanky and would try to get after you defensively. And now he's come in as a guy who can lock down the other teams. That's what they want him to do. And he's also on the offensive end a threat every time he gets the ball. And I think he's been a great spark and a great addition to when, you know, and they can go to him. They can take out, you know, if Ross gets in foul trouble or Brandon Taylor gets in foul trouble, they can go to him and run a small lineup out there, and they're not really losing much. And that, and you know, Pat's definitely using him a lot more.
Yeah. Geno Thorpe, looking at it right now, he is second on the team at 139th in the country in fouls drawn per 40 minutes. He's drawing about 6 fouls a game, which is so awesome. Chad, kind of the same question. Who has been the most important player not named DJ Newbill for Penn State during the first 13 games of the year?
I think the most important is Brandon Taylor, just because when he shows up, this team, it look a lot different. They have a threat from the outside. They have, a dependable score in the post, in the mid range. He kind of, when he's off his game, he'll jack up a lot of shots that are maybe quick or out of rhythm, and it kind of takes away from the flow of the team. But when he's playing on his game and when he's playing within himself more, I think Penn State looks a lot better, a lot more dangerous. They have Geno, Shep, and John Johnson, who are all capable scorers, but they're little guys. Brandon Taylor can give you that post, that inside out threat that he has that nobody else on the team can do. So, and I think we saw the last two games that when he's not playing well, Penn State doesn't really have a chance, or they don't play their best. So I think he's the most important player, for better or worse.
Yeah, I think that's certainly a fair statement to make. We'll make this one really quick, and this will be the actual last question. We'll start again with you, Chad. if you had to kind of pick the one thing, whether it's a player, whether it's something that the team did during the first 13 games or whatever, that was the most disappointing to the start of the for the not during the non-conference slate, what would you say it was?
Probably Donovan Jackson's inability to stay on the floor. He's still committing fouls at an incredible rate, 8.8 per 40 minutes. That's bad, as they say.
That's unfathomable.
He showed some flashes last year. He had a couple of really nice games at the start of the year. I remember against LaSalle, he had, like 17 points or something and a couple threes and blocked a bunch of shots. He's just not doing the same. He's not performing the same this year. He's not regressed, but he's not at the same time, he's not taking a step forward either. And Penn State's big men have not lived up to expectation. I think, some of that has to fall squarely on Donovan Jack, who just doesn't, I don't know, the defense, the fouling is just, it's killing Penn State a lot of times. And, you can't have that in the Big Ten and in major college basketball either. He's been just his physique and just the way he plays, it's just not what it has to be for Penn State to be, one of those teams that is competing for an NCAA tournament berth for real and not just skating by on a 12-1 record against, subpar competition or whatever.
Donovan Jack so far this year has not made a three-pointer, and for a guy that –
That's fine. I don't mind he's not shooting threes.
Yeah.
I don't care about that. It's just the fouling and the shot blocking is not quite there as it was last year, and he's just, maybe this is his ceiling. Maybe this is just what he is. He can't really – there's not much more for him to grow. So, I don't know. That's the biggest disappointment this year. I thought he had more potential than he showed this year.
Yeah. What I was just going to really quickly say is you could just see, and it's really hard to kind of just judge based on one thing, but just on the number of 3 points made and attempted this year, it seems like he's trying to change up his game a bit to be more of a low post guy. And I don't want to say that it hasn't worked, but he's he really needs to figure out how to stay on the floor. Piano, same question to you. Any specific thing, player, really anything that has been extra disappointing to you to start the season?
Yeah, I'm going to steal part of Chad's answer. I'm just going to go with just the lack of progression from both Donovan Jack and Ross Travis. I mean, these are two guys that have been there now just for 4 years and have just – they don't look that much different from – they don't look that much better than players that they were 2 years ago. And you kept waiting. And they've throughout their time at Penn State, they've shown signs. And they each had a couple games here and there where you say, okay, that's what this guy can do sometimes. Now if he can just do it consistently or just be like, three-quarters of what he was in that game and do that consistently. And it's just – for me, they're guys. It's just you're not getting it. Chad hit most of the points on Donovan Jacks. I'll elaborate more on Ross. Just – I mean, he can rebound. And, Ross Travis, I think, was put on this planet to get rebounds. One of the best rebounders I've ever seen in person. He has a nose for the ball, and that's really good. He's getting 7 a game, and that's what Penn State needs. But just his lack of production offensively, just to be, he's shooting, he's 3-for-20 from the foul line. As a forward, this is mind-blowing that you can be, he can be 3-for-20 from the free throw line. And he's still taking some ill-advised shots. His mid-range game is getting a little better, but again, just doesn't look like he's a much improved player than he was a year, even 2 years ago. And I think that's what would put this team over the hump would be if those two guys were producing a little bit more on both ends of the floor.
Yeah, I'm actually looking at this right now. In terms of field goal percentage, this is the best that Ross Travis has ever shot. But then you look at something like of course, he's not going to be hitting too many threes. That's not his game. But then he gets just the free throw line, where he is 3-for-20 on the year, and this is the least that he has gotten to the free throw line in his career. He's averaging 1.3 shots a game. That's just really depressing. And he has carved out his niche. We really do know what he is by now, but kind of like you said, you would like to see him make some kind of a step forward instead of just being the guy that dives for loose balls and grabs rebounds like crazy. So that's it. That's our very quick bang-up non-conference recap. Let's dive right – just get right into conference slate. Might as well make it like a Band-Aid and just rip it off quickly. Penn State started its conference play on New Year's Eve by going to Wisconsin in a game that I don't really think anyone expected Penn State to win. Not saying that as a negative thing. It's just when you think of the three best teams in college basketball this year, Kentucky's number one, Duke is probably number two, and you have a very, very strong case that Wisconsin is number three. And the Badgers just went out, and they were their usual hyper-efficient selves from the field, won 89-72. And listen, Chad, Penn State scored 72 points in the Kohl Center, and they shot incredibly well from the field. Those are some really optimistic takeaways from this game, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. Nothing to like be upset about, really, because Wisconsin just played out of their mind. And when they play out of their mind, they're beating every team in the country. Even Kentucky, I would say. Frank Kaminsky, holy hell, what a player he is.
Yeah.
He just had his way with whoever was against that was guarding him. Sam Decker, just, you know, all those guys, they have, like, seems like they have 15,000 guys who can shoot threes. Nigel Hayes was outstanding, 21 points. You know, I get mad, but, like, you know, Wisconsin's just so good.
Wait,
there's no point in being upset about. Go ahead.
How upset can you be with going – and this is something that, like, people came at you and me for, like, not being mad about this, Chad. How upset can you be when a Penn State, which is – at best, probably a mid-tier team in the Big Ten, goes into Wisconsin and plays a very solid offensive game, but can't shut down Wisconsin, which is one of the best and most efficient offenses in America. Like, this isn't just a ho-hum or Penn State thing. This is a Wisconsin is awesome at basketball thing. I'm looking at this right now. Frank Kaminsky took 11 shots and he missed four. Nigel Hayes and Sam Decker combined to take 13, and they both missed one. Like, that isn't necessarily Penn State playing bad defense. That is just Wisconsin is a juggernaut. If Penn State plays them 100 times this year, they may get one, maybe two. And, like really, Steven, how upset can we be about this loss?
No, I mean, if you're a reasonable fan, I think you're good. You guys are being level-headed and very smart here. That's there's nothing wrong. You're not going to win. If you go to the Kohl Center and Wisconsin gets four guys that score 16 or more points and they shoot the ball 64% or whatever they shot, I don't think anyone's going to win that game, especially not Penn State. And there were a lot of positives. I mean, Penn State was down 8-0. They could have rolled over right then. They could have lost this game by 40, and they could have been down by 27 at halftime. But they actually fought back. They had a 3-point lead with a couple minutes left in the first half. DJ Newville made some shots that were outrageous, and he played one hell of a first half of basketball. He put a pretty good game, and this first half was just insane. And there were some good things to take away from that game. I mean, it was promising. I mean, if you take out last night, it looked all right. You were saying, okay, maybe this team can compete with everyone in the Big Ten. And yeah, there's nothing wrong with not being upset or whatever people were mad at you guys for.
Yeah, DJ on the night, 29 points on 11-for-18 shooting. That's the tied for the second most points that he has scored this season. Of course, he had 35 in the loss against Charlotte, and he went 11-for-18 from the field, which is fantastic. And arguably his best shot.
He got an ovation from the crowd too when he went out. That was pretty sweet.
I actually did, but this is just another for when I get angry enough sometime this season to write a DJ Newbill as the second best player in the Big Ten post. Just another thing I could put into that. He had a monster game. His best shot didn't even count. He got fouled at the free throw line sometime in the first half, and he just threw the ball in the air hoping that it would go in, and it went in, and they called it on the floor because of the Big Ten ref. But still, are there any negatives to take away from this game?
I guess just, you know, some of the same stuff we mentioned before, Brandon Taylor and Ross Travis not really have great games. But, you know, it's Wisconsin, again, like, what do you want them to do? I got nothing else to add to that, really. One more positive, I guess. Shep Garner in his first Big Ten road game, had 11 points on five of eight shooting. Not a lot to be upset about here.
Piano. Same question to you. Any negatives that you really saw in this game?
They took up 89 points. There's something you could have done better defensively. But it's tough. Pennsylvania doesn't have the personnel to guard Wisconsin inside, and I don't know if many people have the personnel to guard Wisconsin anywhere on the court. But 89 points, I'm sure that's not something Pat Chambers is happy about. But yeah, it's just tough. They're a very, very good team. I'm expecting this team to go back to the Final Four, maybe even compete for a championship this year. And I like what Chad said too about Shep, and I think he had a turnover maybe the first or second possession where he just threw the ball away. And then he came back and he made a jumper and he had two really nice assists in the first 2 minutes after that. The kid's been impressive and he has a lot of poise for someone who's 18 in like 3 weeks. So
yeah,
that was a positive.
So far the only loss that Wisconsin suffered this year came to one of the two teams in the country that is just outright better than it. Duke. Went to the Kohl Center. Wisconsin couldn't hit a three to save their lives. Blue Devils ended up winning that game. You mentioned Shep Gardner, and we're going to use this as a leaping point into yesterday's game. We're filming this on Sunday, so it would be yesterday on Saturday's game against Rutgers. This was Rutgers' second Big Ten game. It was at the Rack in New Brunswick, New Jersey. The Scarlet Knights beat the Nittany Lions in a game that I would like to block from my memory, 50-46. I'll start with you, Piano, and then I'll go to you, Chad, and I really want to hear what both of you have to say on this. Shep Gardner went 1-for-7 from three. Brandon Taylor went two for nine from three. What did you think about that? Like, were you impressed with how those guys were trying to fight out of slumps, or were you guys like going, hey, you know what you should probably do? Not take one dribble off of the screen 25 feet away from the hoop and hoist up a three.
I'm going to go with the latter on most of the shots. Some of them were within the flow of the offense, but a lot of it was forced. I think sometimes if you're just having a bad night, and not even personally, but as a team, if you're just having a bad night and you're struggling to put the ball in, you're trailing, I'm due to hit a three, I'm going to put one up, and it's a bad mindset, and Penn State got out of rhythm a lot offensively last night and just put up some bad shots, and yet those two guys going 3-for-16, it's going to be tough for them to win games like this, and even if their DJ went 1-for-6 from behind the line, so the three of them together go 4-for-22, I think my math's correct, which is not a good percentage whatsoever. And Penn State's had a bad night offensively, end-to-end, 40 minutes of just very bad offense. And the thing was, they had a chance to win this game, too, and it was a game they really needed to win. And that's they didn't pick a good time to have a bad offensive night.
Yeah, really a horrible offensive night here. Let me do the math on this quick. 4 divided by 22. TJ Newville, Brandon Taylor, and Shep Gardner, they shot 18% from three, which is not good, gentlemen, not good. Chad, let me ask you the same question. Like, what did you think of DJ is almost a bit immune for this, because I believe three or four of those attempts came in, like, the last minute when they needed to just hoist up threes. So what did you think about Brandon Taylor and Shep Gardner either being way too confident in themselves or just not understanding what they needed to do to kind of settle the game down?
Like Steve said, it's not – I don't mind the confidence. It's just, knowing when to take the shot, knowing when, it's time to make a pass or when it's time to drive to the rim. They just look out of sync and out of sorts. I give a little bit of credit to Rutgers because they played really well defensively, had a good amount of blocked shots on the inside. Kind of forced Penn State's hand a little bit to make him hit some shots from deep. Just a bad day, I guess, at the office. They're not that bad of shooters. None of those three are.
No.
Maybe it was the environment. Maybe it was just you know, for the letdown, and after the Wisconsin game, if there was such a thing as a letdown after that game, or, you know, it's just any number of factors, and it just all kind of caught up to Penn State at one time. So,
yeah,
I don't think they're not that bad of a team, Penn State. They're not as bad as they played. I don't believe that for a second. It wouldn't surprise me if they came out against Michigan and got a close pick. You know, there's still time to recruit the season and stuff. But yeah, they have to, you know, play within themselves more. They have to just trust each other a little more than they did yesterday.
Yeah. Looking at it right now, Rutgers blocked 8 shots yesterday, which was, it was very commendable on their part. I mean, give them plenty of credit. I mean, a lot of Penn State's offense has come from guys attacking the basket this year and getting to the free throw line. And Rutgers just did a very, very good job, not only understanding that this was what Penn State wanted to do, but how to neutralize it without fouling. So you can only, like, there are plenty of reasons to be upset about this game. Don't get me wrong. Like, I was very, very, very cheesed off last night after watching what happened here. Chad, like, are there any net positives that you could take away from last night's game?
Can I say no?
Yeah, of course you can.
No.
There really was
enough. I mean, John Johnson had a decent game, but other than that,
yeah.
Ugh, I'm looking at the box score now. Just a mess. Ugh.
I'm looking at the over ratings for Penn State, and
don't do that, Bill. Don't do that.
Jordan Dickerson at a 37, Ross Travis at 41, Geno Thorpe at 32. Like, my goodness, but
nobody
yeah.
even put up a nobody even put up a token 69 for us to laugh at. How rude of them! Ridiculous.
In fact, Chef came close. He had a 67. Piano. I guess let me present the same question to you. Like, are there any positives that you could take away from this? You're a pretty optimistic guy, so I hope that you can. And if not, we have a big issue.
Oh, it's over. The game's over. 40 minutes, blew the whistle. They got to go home. Their next game's at home, I guess. That's good. That's about it. That's all I got for it. And it was just ugly. Just a bad, like, it's, everyone has a bad night offensively at the same time. It's just resulting in an ugly loss to a team that Penn State's better than. So I can't find much.
You guys think Pat deserves any blame for this? I hate playing like the blame game, but I don't know. It's people seem to be asking about, like, did Chambers do anything wrong or could he do something different? I really don't know. I don't know. What do you think, Steve?
I'm just saying it didn't look like a team. They got down, what was 11? They were down 11-1 before they scored a field goal. Didn't look like a team that was motivated to play. And, I mean, I know they're on the roof the second straight time and it's winter break and all this is going on, but it just didn't look like a team that came out and wanted to play basketball.
I think some of that
falls on the players, but I think some of that also falls on the coach.
Yeah, I certainly agree with you. Like, I think that, like, you should, when players keep hoisting up threes and not making them, like, you should pull them if you can. And that's really the issue. Like, Brandon Taylor really couldn't get taken out of the game. Same with Chef Gardner. They couldn't be taken out for too long. Chambers couldn't use this as one of those games where he says, listen, you have just shown that you don't have it tonight. You're sitting on the bench all game. He couldn't have done that. So, like, yes, upset about that, but I understand where it comes from. I think the criticism that he deserves, if he does deserve any, is that the team came out, and I didn't get a chance to watch the first X number of minutes because Miami and Virginia decided they wanted to play a really good game that went to 2 overtimes. But by all accounts, the team just came out and looked lethargic. It looked like a team that had a bit of a hangover from the last game, wasn't really ready to come out and play. And that's the stuff that I think you could say that's on the coach. When you get out coached by Eddie Jordan, like, there's just something wrong with that, man. Like, that's very unfortunate.
I forgot Eddie Jordan was Rutgers coach until last night. Seriously. I kind of laughed. I was like, what? Eddie Jordan.
Yeah, he coached MJ in Washington, or no, that was Doug Collins. He was the guy in Washington after Doug Collins left, if I remember.
Gilbert Arenas, Caramba.
Was he there for the gun incident? Yeah, I think he was there for the gun incident with Gilbert and Javaris Crittenton.
That's right. Yep.
And yeah, and he is just not. He is not exactly. Been a spectacular coach. Like after the gun incident and a couple other things, he ended up leaving. And I don't need. In 2008-09, in the first 11 games of the Washington season, he went 1-10, got fired. Somehow he got a job the next season with the Sixers and went a cool 27.
What do you mean, 27 and 55?
Somehow, yeah.
Yeah, he was fired after one season, which was remarkable. And then he went to the Lake. In 2012, he went to the Lakers as an assistant coach. If you remember correctly, I believe this was the Lakers team coached by Mike Brown when he got fired five games into the season. So it's been a tumultuous few years for Eddie Jordan. Like, I'm obviously not rooting for the guy because he coaches Rutgers. But you know what? Good on you, Eddie Jordan. You're sticking around, and you keep on grinding there, big guy. Let's promise, unless it costs us a tournament bid and we can then get really mad about it, then let's just never talk about this game again. You guys are cool with that, right?
Yep. Yeah, sure.
There, I double check. This week, Penn State has one game. It's coming into this season, it may have looked like a game where Penn State was really, 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 really going to have to be tested. And if they got this win, it would be a really good notch in their belt come tournament time. Unfortunately, Michigan has imploded this season. The Wolverines notably lost back-to-back home games to NJIT and Eastern Michigan. It is 8-6 on the season with losses to Villanova, the two aforementioned teams, Arizona, SMU, and whatever the hell a Purdue is. So, Chad, give us a really quick rundown of the Wolverines. What has gone so wrong this season?
Well, they have a lot of talent in the backcourt. Caris LeVert's probably one of the better players in the Big Ten. Zach Irvin's an improved player from last year. He's been more of a starter this year. I would say it's Mike Albrecht. Famous for asking Kate Upton about what she thought about his game in the national championship a couple years ago. Love Spike. Derek Walton's a pretty good point guard, but they rely a lot on jump shots, and when they're not making jumpers, they are very very easy to beat. Their game against Purdue the other day, they scored, I believe, they scored 18 points in the second half. That is bad. They shot 7 of 27 from two-point range all game long. It's a 23. Yeah, they don't really have an inside presence besides Ricky Doyle, who's a 6'9 freshman. So they, you know,
nice.
Like usual, they're a young team. Yeah, thank you. Nice. they're a young team as usual, but this year they just don't have quite the horses that they had the last couple of years under John Beilein. So, you know, if they have an off-night shooting, this could be a win for Penn State. But you know, then again, teams tend to shoot pretty well against Penn State at the BJC for whatever reason. So anything can happen, I guess. I'm not too confident about this one for Penn State, but you never know, I suppose.
All right. We're already in anything can happen mode, so I'm very happy. Now, kind of going off of what Chad said, Michigan is really leading on Caris LeVert, who came into this season as kind of the dark horse guy nationally that was being – randomly put on first-team All-American list, second-team All-American list. And to me, he never really showed that he deserved that. But a lot of people were assuming that he was going to make the John Beilein jump, whatever that's supposed to mean, just being the de facto best player on the team coached by John Beilein, you were going to be better. And he certainly played a ton this year. He's 19th in the country in percentage of minutes played. Tied for first in the team scoring at 14.6 a night, shooting 41% from the field and 40% for three. But, like, him and Zach Irvin, if you can kind of put the clamps on those two guys, Michigan, they're just not very good. Is that accurate, Chad? If you either put the clamps on those two or put the clamps on everybody but those two, you have a really good shot at winning.
Well, like I said, Derek Walton's a pretty good point guard, probably one of the better point guards in the Big Ten. But yeah, like, you know, they just, if they're not shooting well, they're really easy to beat. They're really soft inside. They have two players that are 6'8 or taller that get regular minutes. So, you know, it's kind of a good matchup for Penn State at home because, you know, if Donovan Jack and Jordan Dickerson and Julian Moore and those guys aren't really counted on to produce, and this is a team to do it against. So,
yeah,
Penn State can, you know, get their guards going against Michigan. This could be a chance for Penn State to get it, you know, on the board here in the Big Ten.
Piano, I'll go to you with this. We really know Michigan. The thing that they're most famous for, at least under John Beilein, is on the defensive end, they love playing that 1-3-1 zone. This should set the table for Donovan Jack and Jordan Dickerson and Brandon Taylor to have some pretty nice games, correct?
You would hope so. I mean, Penn State's struggled against the 1-3-1 before. I know we weren't talking about Rutgers anymore, but I'll throw it back to Princeton last year to dig up more bad memories for you guys.
God, why are we invite
you
on this podcast?
I know. I'm sorry. But no, I mean, if Penn State can get the ball.
I've got to watch one more time, and we're having Ben Jones on here, sir.
No. Don't threaten me with this. It should set up some shots. If they can get the ball inside and work it around, they should be able to get those guys the ball inside. And the Big Ten, especially this year, is a very, very guard-oriented league, and Michigan's no different. Their front court, you know, Penn State doesn't have a bunch of heavy hitters in its front court, nearly neither does Michigan. But Penn State can work the ball in there. I think if they can get out and transition, maybe run a little bit, they'll help them in this game. And I think they'll be okay. It should open up some looks. I think Brandon Taylor will get more looks from three. It'll be a matter of him hitting them. He'll be back at home. Might be able to camp out on the baseline a little bit. And so that might work, but I never know. I'm never going to put any guarantees on Penn State's front court.
So, Chet, what was the game this year? I can't think of it off the top of my head where one of the opponents decided that they were going to start playing a 1-3-1. So I don't know if it was Chambers telling him to do this or if Taylor just did this on his own accord, but he started camping out in the corner, and he made like two or three threes in a row and just murdered whoever the opposing team was. Which game was that?
Oh, God.
Was it GW?
I think it was GW, yeah.
I remember hitting two threes in a row against George Washington.
Yeah, it was GW.
It was either them or Akron. I can't remember which one.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it was G-Dub. I remember that.
Yeah, so that kind of went through the strategy, right? Just have him, have Chef, have DJ, have those guys kind of find spaces in this zone and just do what they do so well from time to time and just hoist up a bunch of threes.
If they're open, you know, for good looks, sure. You know, I don't want them to get into that the way it was, you know, the other day when they were just jacking threes from wherever they felt like it. But, yeah, if they play with the offense and get open threes from the corner, you know, that is Brandon Taylor's shot. I don't know if you saw Eric tweeted out a shot analytics chart of Brandon Taylor's, you know, his shot chart small year, and he's like 50% or so from that corner. And everywhere else he's around 30, 40% or less. So,
yeah,
I mean, if they can figure out that's a shot, let them take that, sure. But, yeah, you know, like Piano said, just, you know, get in transition against Michigan because they like to play really slow. They're 331st in the country in adjusted tempo at around 62 possessions a game. Penn State's closer to 67 on the year per game. So, yeah, if they can get on run a little bit more, you know, that's certainly good for their chances, I think.
Yeah. I just pulled the chart up right now. And Brandon Taylor is shooting 58% from the right corner, 43% from the on the long twos from the right, 75% from the right elbow. So really the fact that he isn't shooting there all the time is a bit of a tragedy, but whatever. Piano, you're our guest. We would like to start with you. What do you expect to happen in this game? Give us a score at the end of whatever you predict is going to occur.
Sure. I'm not going to say it's not a must win, but it feels like a game that Penn State really needs to have if this season's going to continue to have a little bit of promise in it. And I think, if I'm Pat Chambers, I'm making my players try to understand that a little bit, not like forcing them to think like you must win this game or our season's lost, but kind of play with a little more sense of urgency. You're back on your home court. I know there aren't students there. I know it won't be a huge crowd, but you're at home. You're comfortable in your routines going into it, and you should be able to, you got to erase the Rutgers game. I don't even know how much film to watch, not how much they'll talk about it, but you got to erase that and put that behind you. I think Penn State can steal a win here. It's going to be close. I think it's going to be a pretty close game. These two teams, you never know. I mean, Penn State beat Mitch McGarry and Trey Burke without Tim Frazier on this court 2 years ago. So, it's possible for a lot of things that could happen. But I think Penn State will shoot a lot better than the other day. I think DJ will have a nice game. And I think if they can get the good backcourt defense on guys like LeVert and Irvin to slow them down, Michigan really doesn't have another score. I caught a little bit of their Michigan's game against Purdue. I guess it was yesterday or 2 days ago. They really looked lethargic, and I read something. Beeline just basically said we don't have a go-to guy right now. We don't have a leader on the floor when our guys are not shooting the ball well. So I think Penn State can play some good defense. I think they're going to be okay. I think their veteranness will come into play here a little bit too, being at home, playing with a little bit of urgency. I see Penn State winning maybe a 4 or 5 point game here.
Yeah, I think that's certainly fair.
Do I need a score? Does it get a score in there?
You said 4 or 5, which is fine, but
yeah.
If you want to give us a score, by all means.
Give me 67, 62.
Ooh, okay. Nice.
Yeah.
So no free Big Macs. That's people aren't going to like your piano.
They'll be happy with the win, I guess.
Yeah, but when you can get free food out of it. Chad, let's go to you. Kind of the same thing. What do you expect to happen in this game? What do you want to see in this game? And what do you got for the final?
It'll be a close game, I think. It's do or die for both these teams. Michigan, they would be able to circle this on their calendar as a game they would have won at the beginning of the year. But the way they play, they kind of need another boost here. After that paltry performance at Purdue, it's going to be a close one. I don't know. final score, I'll say 69-67, Penn State squeaks it out.
Nice.
That home crowd. I hope there's a nice
crowd.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Yeah.
I hope there's going to be a nice crowd because they – even though they lost the last two games, they deserve a good home crowd to open the Big Ten.
Yes.
And I'm just terrified of what LeVert and Irvin can do because they haven't played that well this year, but we know they're very capable of putting up big numbers. So we'll see.
Usual plea that if you can get to State College for the game, please go be loud and support the Nittany Lions. I'm with these guys. I expect it to be a close game. The one I don't think Penn State should win this game. They've just been so like after losing to Rutgers, I don't know how optimistic you can be, especially losing to Rutgers in the way that it lost. But I think the one thing that is really going that this could be the game where all of these close games that Penn State has played in the non-conference could really help it because Penn State kept finding ways to win those. Meanwhile, Michigan lost to Villanova by 5, lost to NJIT by 2, lost to Eastern Michigan by 3. As we heard John Beilein said, the team doesn't really have that go-to guy when it needs 2 points or needs to get to the foul line or anything like that. And Penn State has the second best player in the Big Ten in DJ Newbill. I'm like so tempted to say Penn State. You know what? You got to die sometime. I'll take Penn State 69-63, something in that general area. So I think it's a great game regardless.
Nice.
I think we're all – yes, thank you. We're all on the same page that it's going to be a really good game anyway between two teams that kind of need to get a win to get to where they wanted to be at this point in the season. I mean, while Michigan has struggled getting to 2-1 in conference play, it certainly is a very nice little morale booster, and for Penn State, need to get that first conference win, because while, like, the slate after this game isn't too, like, it's pretty tough. I mean, at Indiana, home against Purdue, at Sparty, home against Rutgers, and then home against Minnesota. So it's not, like, the most brutal stretch they could have, but it's still, like, if you can't get a win in one of these first three games, it's really tough to see Penn State getting a win, more than one or two wins in that stretch. So please, Lions, for the love of God, pull this win out. So that's basically it for what we've had to say about the team, about this team so far this year. Piano, do you have any, like, final thoughts on anything that we've discussed up to this point? Because we have one last thing we're going to talk about at the very end.
Oh, man. No, not really. No, I'm pretty much all set, Billy. You get to your final thing.
Oh, we will. Chad, any final thoughts for you? Because, like, but before we get to the last thing, which is actually a really happy thing, and I'm glad we could talk about it.
No, I'm good. Let's get to it.
You're good? All right.
Yep.
So for those that aren't aware, former Penn State guard and Nittany Lion legend Tim Frazier is currently in the midst of scorching the fucking earth down in the D-League. I think that's the most apt way to describe what he's doing down there. He is averaging 16.2 points, 8.3 assists, 6.6 rebounds, 2.1 steals. He has 5-6 double-doubles and a triple-double in 18 games. He's shooting nearly 50% from the field, 30% three. He's getting to a free throw line at an awesome rate. Like, Chad, what the hell is going on with Tim Frazier?
I think this is kind of his trajectory that he would have followed if he wouldn't have torn his ACL or his Achilles in 2013, 12, whatever that year that was. He's like forever ago. You know, he was always at the year, his first year under Chambers. He was outstanding. He was probably one of the nation's best pure point guards. And he's retaining some of that magic this year in the D-League. Now, you know, the D-League is not really known for great defense. Yeah, that should be said off the top of the bat. But still.
Why do they call it the D-League, Chad?
It should be the non-D-League.
No.
Right? Or it should just be
– And the letter to Adam Silver.
It could be just called the League because there ain't no D.
The League.
Right. The non-D or no
I just,
or, okay.
You guys,
yeah.
You guys didn't see this, but I just nay-nayed in my living room with that hot fire that I just dropped on y'all.
Yeah. Anyways, you know.
Sorry.
We're good. No, that's what we're
Welcome
here for.
To the pod,
we're, here
yeah,
to, no. We're here to be very awkward and talk over each other. It's great. Yeah, you know, he's doing this against players that are, like, that are some of the college basketball best players of the last, you know, 4 or 5 years. He's teammates with Chris Babb, former Nittany Lion legend, who transferred after 2 years. You know, there's a lot of, you know, recognizable names in the D-League that were really good college players in their own right. And Tim Frazier is, you know, exceeding any expectations and the level of play that is in the D-League right now. So, and tomorrow, or today, I guess, when you listen to this, is the first day that the NBA can sign players to 10-day contracts. And what that means is, you know, anybody from the D-League or anybody who's out of basketball or not with the team right now can be signed to a deal for 10 days or for 3 games, whichever comes first. And a lot of teams will bring in players that, D-League players will call them up and, you know, get a little run out if there's a spot in the roster, you know, if there's an injury or there's a trade that just happened. So, you know, there's a chance that Tim Frazier could be one of these players that gets called up in the next week or so
and, you know, sits on a roster for at least 3 games, and if the team decides they like him, they can sign another 10-day deal. And after his second 10-day deal, the player has to be signed for the rest of the year. So there's a chance that Tim Frazier could be on an NBA roster for the rest of the year. The way he's playing right now, it seems likely that he'll get one call up to an NBA team. So that's awesome. Tim Frazier and for Penn State, and just a great story for him to, you know, finally get back to 100%. You know, sometimes last year he didn't really have quite the burst that he had 2 years ago. But I think now he's kind of showing what the player he could have been and the player he's becoming is what we all thought he could be all along. So it's great for Tim. I'm so happy for him. He's, you know, one of the best in the lines of all time, and he deserves it.
Absolutely. Currently, Tim is actually fourth in the D-League in assists per game, or assist to turnover ratio, I'm sorry, or something like that. He's fourth. And there's a bit of an asterisk there because one of the players ahead of him plays for the Reno Bighorns, and you guys, you of course remember Grinnell College, the team that, like, they play 5-on-4, a 4-on-5 defense, and they had that one.
They had
that one guy who he scored like 160 in a game or whatever it was. The Sacramento Kings affiliate actually signed that the coach's son because they wanted to implement that. So they're just putting up like the craziest numbers. Like they have two guys averaging 27 a game. Like that's the kind of team that we're dealing with. But yeah, Tim is fourth in assists. By however they quantify clutch, I'm not 100% sure how they do it, but however they quantify it, Tim is, based on the NBA D League stats site, the most clutch player in the developmental league. Which, like, apparently, like, I'm not sure how they quantify it.
D League making some crazy sabermetrics here.
But I guess in clutch situations, he has scored 49 points this season. Over the course of the entire year, and the league averages 12 points over the season. So, like, good on you, Tim. That's I know that there are some, like, complete nihilists who don't believe that clutch in sports is a thing, but
it's not.
You're doing good, Tim. Hey, listen, it makes Tim look better, man. Like, we're going to roll with this. But, yeah, like, I'm looking at this right now. He is currently on the affiliate of the Boston Celtics. They just traded away longtime point guard Rajon Rondo. Their current he's on the main Red Claws. And their current point guards are Marcus Smart, of course, the former Oklahoma State star who is just a spectacular basketball player, or at least has potential to be one. Avery Bradley, of course, went to Texas. Jameer Nelson, who was the starting point guard for my beloved Orlando Magic, and Phil Pressey from Missouri. None of them have a player efficiency rating over 10.6. It hasn't been very good for Brad Stevens. So, hey, who knows? Maybe he tries to send Jameer away to a team with that needs a point guard. He calls up Tim, and then Tim takes the league over. Let's all hope for that, I suppose. But
he can be called up by any team. It doesn't have to be the Celtics.
Yes.
They're the Celtics affiliate, but, you know, he's not an attached player. That's like an official title for players in the D-League, so he's free to sign wherever. So just throwing that out there.
Yeah. So, like, hopefully some team gives him a call. And, like, he's certainly done more than enough to deserve it so far. And I know that if he makes his way down to beautiful Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, and either plays for or against the Sixers, I'll try and make it. I want to see Tim play in the NBA. That would be awesome. And I know that at least Chad would try and come. I hope Piano could come. I hope all of you could come should a situation like that happen, so we can go cheer on one of the best Nittany Lion basketball players of all time. Piano, any final Tim Frazier thoughts for you?
Well, first of all, they're based in Portland, right? The main Red Claws. Am I wrong on that?
Yeah, they are Portland, Maine, yeah.
Okay, my family has a cottage on an island off Portland, Maine, and if Tim, if you're listening, you should go to Becky's Diner. Really good breakfast joint in Portland. I also don't envy anyone who spends a winter in Portland, Maine.
So I'm glad Tim Frazier is able to spend it indoors playing basketball and doing a good job of playing basketball. But seriously, yeah, no, Tim Frazier, always really fun guy to watch. One of the best, most fun guys to watch that came through this program at Penn State in the last however many years. A good dude. It was a good story when he came back. And I agree with Chad that he was probably not quite himself or where he thought he'd be in his senior season after the injury. I don't really think anyone is. It takes a long time, and it takes different people different time to recover from injuries, but just to trust it, to be able to, you know, have as much off of your foot and leg as in basketball, it's such a crucial ligament that you need. And, yeah, I think I've been watching the D-League religiously, but I've seen some clips here and there, and Tim looks good, and, yeah, it's good. It's good for him. It's good for the program, and hopefully he gets a shot somewhere. It would be pretty cool to see Tim Frazier in the NBA.
Yeah, certainly, and for – a point guard whose game is all about explosiveness, like the two worst things that you could hurt are your Achilles and one of the dilligos to your knee. He hurt one of those, and he's coming back strong. I don't remember who the team played the other day, the game where Tim I think he had a triple-double. And if you watch those highlights, and there, again, I'll post them down below, he was doing all those awesome Tim Frazier things that we're used to where he – is somehow able to split two defenders, get into the lane, and throw up a runner from, like, an impossible angle that just gets over a big man's fingertips and drops right in. And it's so, so, so great to see Tim doing that again. Chad, any final thoughts, any pieces about Tim Frazier possibly making it into the NBA that you would like to plug?
Any what? What did you say?
Do you have any upcoming pieces about Tim Frazier that are going up on the site that you would like to plug?
It will be up before this post is up, so don't worry about it.
All right, awesome. Perfect. I think that's it for this week. Chad, we're a minute away from hitting the 69-minute mark. Do you want to ramble about
something? Well, I might
as
well go for it,
man. Just go.
I'd be upset if we didn't.
Yeah.
Certainly. Chad, in 90 seconds, give us a recruiting wrap-up.
Okay.
How our current recruits are doing.
Oh, they're doing good, I guess. Davis and Goulis is having a decent season, and at St. Mary's Rec in Virginia or Maryland, one of those states, Pierrot 1. O'Kell is going to be on TV on Saturday on ESPN2, or U, I believe. So check that out. You can watch Josh Reeves and Johansson. And as far as 2015 recruiting news, Tracy Carter is no longer considered Penn State. He's down to Louisville, Seton Hall, and Tennessee, I believe. There's one more program in there, but he's no longer considering Penn State. So that just about wraps up 2015 class for Penn State. For now.
All right. There may be one extra straggler that gets on at the very end. But, certainly make sure you watch when Josh Reese and Johansson are on television. Support them. Before we go, again, one last time, thank you very much to Stephen Pjanović for taking 69 minutes out of his Sunday night to talk about Penn State basketball, two of us. Can't wait to have you back on sometime in the future, Steve.
Fellas, it's been a pleasure. Thanks for having me. Happy New Year.
Thank you, Steve.
Yes, sir.
Follow
same to you. Follow us, Pjanović. Hopefully we're all at State College sometime in the near future and we could all celebrate this fantastic podcast together. So that's it for this episode of the show. For Chad Markulich, Stephen Pjanović, I'm Bill DeFilippo. Thanks for listening, guys.